Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Few jazz artists were as popular or influential as pianist Dave Brubeck, best known for his recordings from the late 50s and 60s, particularly the groundbreaking album Time Out from 1959. His polyphonic and polyrhythmic career spanned almost seven decades and more than 100 records. Yesterday, Dave Brubeck died of heart failure in Norwalk, Connecticut. Today, he would have been 92 years old. Joining me by phone is the jazz historian Gary Giddens. Gary, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, a lot of people will remember Dave Brubeck for one piece, for Take Five. But how would you describe the larger body of work that Brubeck left behind?
Well, Brubeck was always trying to push things forward, and I once did an essay in a rather ironic voice about this, because he did all the things that were later blamed on the avant-garde. The avant-garde players were attacked for doing things like using polyrhythms and rubato rhythms or lack of rhythms, for being dissonant, for going away from the chord changes, from playing endless solos that went on for 10, 15 minutes. Brubeck did all of this, and yet somehow he managed to do it in a way that made him enormously popular. People could follow it. There was always some sort of a ground beat that he returned to, so that even when he did a piece in 9-4, the solos would usually go into a straight 4, and it would be the contrast between the exotic beat and the 4-beat pulse that would, I think, excite people and bring them into the music. And, the Time Out thing changed everything.
That's the record that has Take Five on it.
Right, and Blue Rondo a la Turk, which was also huge. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Dave once on the stage at the Kennedy Center, and he loved to tell this story about how Columbia initially refused to release the album because they thought it would kill his career. I mean, who wants to hear all tunes in strange time signatures? And worst of all, they were all original tunes, and, you know, no one would be able to follow them. And then Dave insisted on, I forget his name, Fujito, the Japanese graphic artist, to do the cover, and they were opposed to that. It would just made it look too far out. So finally, he basically wrote a threatening letter, and he got Goddard Lieberson, I guess, on his side, and they put the record out, and to everybody's astonishment, it just went through the roof. Mm-hmm. There was a period in 59-60 when, you know, it was like a Bob Dylan record 5 years later. Everybody had to have it.
Now, but you wanted us to go back a little bit before 1959 and Time Out.
I think that the period, I love the Time Out album. I think it's a culmination of where he was going. But I really am still most excited, I guess, by the middle 50s period, the last records he did on Fantasy, which sold well enough to get him a contract at Columbia. Things like Jazz at Oberlin and Jazz Goes to College, and
right,
then the, you know,
Red Hot and Cool.
Red Hot and Cool album. This is where he's starting to write really intriguing tunes that other musicians are beginning to cover, like The Duke, like In Your Own Sweet Way. Both of those were picked up by Miles Davis. And it's a period when he's very loose-limbed in his playing, and he's really trying to figure it out.
Well, the 1954 album, Jazz Goes to College, I mean, Brubeck brought this music to the masses. He brought it to colleges. It led to his face appearing on the cover of Time. And this is an excerpt called Balcony Rock. Thank you. the late Dave Brubeck, pianist and composer. He died yesterday at the age of 91. Today is his birthday. He would have been 92. And we're remembering this iconic figure in jazz with Gary Giddens, executive director of the Leon Levy Center for Biography at the Graduate Center at the City University of New York and veteran jazz writer. That's a 1954 recording by Brubeck, his Balcony Rock, Jazz Goes to College. It's hard, isn't it, Gary, to overstate the importance of what he did for jazz on a kind of a social level in this country?
It would be hard to overstate it. I mean, first of all, he made the name Dave cool. He made horn-rimmed glasses cool. I mean, you know, the guy looked in so many ways to be so square, and yet he really did become a defining figure that people just you know, gravitated to. You know, the whole history of jazz and the history of American music is a constant sort of collusion between races and different cultures. But the black performers tended to attract a certain kind of they tended to represent a certain kind of otherness for a lot of white middle class college kids in that period. So to have a white guy that they could grab onto and identify with physically was pretty much like people who had never spent a lot of time listening to rhythm and blues could suddenly find themselves in Elvis. And this, you have to remember that the middle 50s, when he made those records, jazz was the thing. I mean, that's what Jack Kerouac and Ginsberg and the so-called beat writers were always talking about. It's what Lenny Bruce's comedy was fed by. It was, you know, Steve Allen on television had a jazz artist on almost every night. And it was a very hip thing, and it was extremely popular because right before it, most of popular music had become really silly. It was the Mitch Miller era, and it was all those novelty tunes. And this music was so modern. It didn't sound like swing. It didn't sound like your father's kind of jazz, your parents' jazz. And even the excerpt that you played, those dissonances, I mean, people just, wow, what is that?
Well, the big album, as we mentioned, is Time Out from 1959, which has Blue Rondo a la Turk and the huge hit Take Five. But you mentioned another record from the mid-50s, Gary, Jazz, Red Hot and Cool from 1955. This has the Duke. And the title there, I mean, is it obvious that this is...
Well, it's a tribute to Duke Ellington, and it has one of the most inventive chord sequences that he ever wrote. That's where he's really, I mean, Dave was pretty damned hip. He really knew music, and he understood that the one thing that Ellington had brought to jazz that everybody was still learning from was his harmonic sense. And so he created this very complicated, almost every measure goes into a new key and new chords, much as in some ways as John Coltrane did, you know, 6 years later, 5 years later in Giant Steps. But Giant Steps was basically a sort of a diving board towards improvisation, whereas Dave's piece was, the way he played it, was written through.
Let's hear this 1955 recording by Dave Brubeck, finding himself as Dave Brubeck, and his tune, which would then become a standard, called The Duke. Once again, the late Dave Brubeck, the great jazz pianist and composer, died yesterday at 91. Today, he would have been 92 years old, and we're remembering his life and work with Gary Giddens, the veteran jazz writer and executive director of the Leon Levy Center for Biography at CUNY's Graduate Center. And That's another one of the pieces. Gary, you chose three pieces that you wanted us to hear. We heard Balcony Rock. We heard The Duke. The third one you chose was the St. Louis Blues. And I'm sure you had your reasons for choosing it, but I have my reasons for wanting to hear this tonight as well. And I'd like to play this clip for you.
Okay.
This is Dave Brubeck on Soundcheck back in 2002. And I asked him about the influence of world music on his compositions.
Wherever I go, I listen to the music of that country as much as I can. And there's the saying that now we have world music, but I believed in that in the 40s. I was aware of that.
Well, of course, jazz and Latin music especially have had a very long and profitable kind of cross-pollination going on.
Almost from the beginning of jazz, there was that influence of Latin. And they say the first blues written was W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues, and it starts as a tango.
Uh-huh.
So it goes way back, this cross-pollination of Latin and jazz.
So that is Dave Brubeck's recording of W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues, and Dave Brubeck himself recorded on Soundcheck back in 2002 introducing it. So, Gary, what do you think?
I think that record is just sort of quintessential Dave and quintessential quartet, because it's a blues, it's familiar, it's easy to follow, and then Paul makes that amazing entrance where he's like nowhere. He's just nowhere inside the, you know, he's so inside the changes that he doesn't even have to think of the written melody. And there's a tremendous inspiration that just goes from chorus to chorus. It became one of their sort of standard pieces that they did all the time.
We've been speaking with Gary Giddens, the veteran jazz writer and head of the Leon Levy Center for Biography at the Graduate Center of CUNY. And Soundcheck listeners, if you're a fan of Dave Brubeck, if you have a favorite Brubeck recording or memory, leave it on our website at soundcheck.org. Gary, thank you so much for being with us on the program.
My pleasure.
This is Soundcheck. There's more of Dave Brubeck on our website, including interviews and performances recorded for WNYC, WQXR, and NPR. And again, we're asking you to tell us your favorite Dave Brubeck memory or recording. Leave a comment at soundcheck.org or call us 866-939-1612.